You know how much it costs to get stuff dry clean now? It's ridiculous. I'm actually going to stop buying stuff that's dry clean. It serves myself right for...
I'm long past dry clean only.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not intentional. It's the only pair of trousers that I can find that fit well and last.
They are nice.
Because usually the crotch just rubs out like that when I buy a...
Oh, you got Jamaican crotch.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Is that crotch. What it is?
Yeah. Oh, that's... Oh. You can't take that.
I'm not going to say it.
You're not Jamaican.
I'm not going to say it.
Jamaican.
But I think it's funny that there's actually a term for it because... Every single pair of pants, leggings, shorts, eventually get the little rub on the
start
inside.
Start to bubble up.
Do you not actually get them fixed? I've started getting them altered.
Oh. No, the material wears out.
No, you get patches on the inside.
Yeah, that you use delay in the inevitable.
Yeah, but we used to grind for times like this to shine.
Welcome to another episode of Black in a Box. The world is told by black faces in white spaces. Thank you. I'm proud of me. In the studio, we have Dom.
How are we doing, guys? Hello. Hello. We're back.
We are back, as well as Jello. How are you doing, Jello?
I've been better, but, you know, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. We got some stuff to chop up.
We certainly do.
Alana, how are you feeling? What's been happening?
I'm good. New job. I feel like I've finally settled in energetically. You know, I'm like, you wouldn't know it, readers, viewers, from this podcast, but I am quite introverted. So to manage, you know, interactions with like hundreds of people a day, Jell, I'm sure you'll understand this. It's very draining, and you are also an introvert. So I think I'm finally managing that.
Mm-hmm.
I did run a half marathon on Saturday.
Nice.
So, well, it was not nice.
Where was it?
It was just around Hackney.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, famously, I'm going to be doing the London Marathon in a month. And after last year, I was like, I got this. This is fine. A marathon in comparison to what I did last year?
Oh, I remember this.
No
last
problem.
With Donnie, you were like, yeah,
yeah, I was like, yeah, it's fine. And you were like, oh, how long do you have? I was like, 2 months. It's fine. Went out to run, walk a marathon. To this day, I'm like, I think I've broken my heel.
What?
I was so sore. I should have been training.
You'll be fine, man. You still got training. What, a month and a half?
Aren't you supposed to put month like 12 weeks of solid training in?
Well, I put a whole year in, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna recover.
Yeah, but you can't bank it. I used to train.
I did my 10,000 hours 5 years ago.
I can't tap into that now.
I know, but I was thinking, you know, recover from like the big expense of physical energy last year, and then you know, you'll have like that reserve of the training, like the muscles will remember. I was more just like, okay, well, the cardio fitness is there because I'm not starting from ground zero, you know? So I was like, I just need to work up to reminding my body what it's like to train on hard ground, like running on the road. Mm. And I should have been training.
It's tough, man.
I should have been training.
I've just started my half training. So I've got that one, Hackney one. You probably did the circuit I'm about to do.
I did, and that one's May. Tough.
Yeah, it's quite hilly, isn't it, apparently?
I don't even know if it's the hills, but something about it is tough. I don't know if it's like extra hard concrete, but yeah, do your running outside.
Well, this is it. So this is my second or third week of training for that. And the joke thing is, this last week, I ran 42 kilometers, right? 42 nice. Kilometers.
Wait.
My beautiful betrothed, she is running. That was across the week. 42 kilometers in a week.
Oh, I was
she
like...
is running 50 kilometers on Saturday in one run. And I'm feeling it from four runs.
Yeah, but she's been, you know, she was with what, Rundem?
I don't even, no, she's been training alone for this one.
Oh, okay.
But it's just, it's mad that the likes of you and Jan can run these kind of distances. Like, it don't make any sense.
I tell you what, though, not for long. After this marathon, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. I'm retiring from endurance. From endurance, I'm retiring. I want short, powerful, strong from now on. So as many of you probably know, or if not, last week, Diane Abbott, who is the first black female British MP.
And is part of the class of the first black MPs that came through. So she's literally the first, along with, is it Paul Boateng and Bernie Grant?
Yeah, yeah. So significant woman, trailblazer in many respects. Last week, Frank Hester, who is the biggest donor to the Conservative Tory Party, said that watching Diane Abbott makes you want to hate all black women, and that indeed she should be shot. And that is how great his disdain was for her. How do we feel about this?
Well, let's add the full context, though. He made these comments in 2019, and they came to light last week. It also came to light that he'd made some really quite offensive comments about the Chinese women workers at his place. There was then, obviously, those of you that know, there was a furore, and he was being pressed to apologise, and the Tory party were being pressed to hand back the money that he'd given them. And then he apologised for being rude. He didn't apologise for the racism. He apologised for being rude. And the Tory party were like, what, huh? I'm gonna pocket that money. Like, so I think it's important to give that context, because this guy has been bankrolling the Tories for like the last 5 years. And I was talking on Trisha's show on Saturday, and the saddest thing for me doing that episode with Trisha was how much Trisha worked to say she was impartial while at the same time saying, I have had to have the police when I was working in the UK teach my children how to open packages that might be suspicious. I was offered a police escort when I did the talk show in Australia. But I'm being impartial. And there was something... She's obviously an incredible broadcaster. To have a career that spanned four decades, you have to be incredible. But the fact that she felt the need to be so kind of loud about her impartiality, when it was something that clearly she was able to empathise with, I think speaks to the issue as it is, which is that you can stunt on black women in this country and it doesn't matter. Like, people talk about Diane Abbott not having a head for figures. She didn't lose $37 billion on a track and trace that didn't work. Like, I don't care what sum she got wrong, does it equal $37 billion? Because if it doesn't equal $37 billion, STFU. She was pilloried for having a drink on the underground. She has been, if you notice, and I did notice this, the pictures that they were using in articles last week in many of the newspapers were really unflattering photos of her. You had the Speaker of the House refusing to let her ask a question in the Houses, in the Prime Minister's question last Wednesday. Had this 70-year-old woman standing up and down 46 times whilst everybody else in the chamber was talking about her, which I don't think he realised how profound a visual image that was. Mm-hmm. And I guess my frustration is, if we're going to be honest, I'm not the right person to talk about this. Dom's not the right person to talk about this. But having spoken to so many black women, they're like, I'm not going to speak on camera about this. How many? I know so many black women that are like, I can't even disagree with somebody without being called aggressive. And, you know, I grew up with my little sister, and I remember the crap that she went through at school. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, like, Serena Williams is one of the most famous people on the planet, and they racially abused her. Mm-hmm. Beyonce has been racially abused, and they are like the two totemic black women. Diane Abbott
or
should have
women. One of the biggest sports star in the world.
Hmm?
Oh, and I mean, the biggest pop star in the world.
Yeah.
And
one of the callers on Trisha's show said, Diana Abbott should have a statue. Like, literally, she should have a statue as the first black MP, and instead this country treats her like crap. And I think the only positive that came out of the reports of this was it has just made it super obvious that we can't claim that we don't know anymore. We can't go, oh, when black women go missing, it doesn't even make the news. Did you guys know that there was a young black woman who went missing in February and there has a body been recovered in the last week?
Yeah, but I only know that because other black women have posted that on social media.
It's not been on any of the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Patrice O'Neill wrote a joke 13 years ago where he said, if you want to know the value of a white woman, you look at her and then you wonder how long they would search for her if she was missing. And then he went to a black woman in the audience who was a good-looking black woman. He goes, come on, how long do you think they're going to look for you? And she understood, and it was a powerful, powerful moment. Mm-hmm. And comedy tells us the truth that real life often denies. Diana Abbott is treated abominably, and the sad thing is our black women listeners will go, it's not actually that bad, I've dealt with the same or worse.
Mm-hmm. She'll get a statue very soon, I think. I think she will. I genuinely do. When we think about Windrush, right?
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Everything was fixed with a statue and a train line.
Exactly. We got a new statue. We've now got a train line named after it.
Yeah.
Diane Abbott, if and when Labour become the governing party.
She's not going to be a part of the party.
No, but the thing is, what they will do is they will give her a statue to kind of cleanse themselves of everything that they are culpable for at the moment. It's an obvious play. It's like, how can we be racist? Look at this brand new, shiny new statue we've given you.
Do you know what, though? They're not winning that seat from her if do not. Because the impromptu sister space did an impromptu rally in support of Diane Abbott in Hackney. And is it Hackney Stoke Newington, her seat?
I think so, yeah.
And there were thousands of people that came out. She's got one of the most secure majorities, and she stands on business for her constituency. They're not going to. And by the way, Keir Starmer, you're a blood clot liar. And I want to say that. I want to say that publicly because he's like, well, you know, the reason she is suspended is not a matter for my office. It's the NEC. It's not. She is a member of the Labour Party. It's the whip that's been suspended. That is an issue for the whip's office, which he does have influence over. And he basically, the party has become super factional. Always, you should always beware what people say when they're being disingenuous, because everything that they said, Jeremy Corbyn's going to do this, Jeremy Corbyn's going to do that, these guys have come in and done it worse. Mm. Have a look at the candidates that they're putting forward. Have a look at the people that are being literally purged from the party. Why is it that there are two black women MPs that have had the whip removed? Diane Abbott put out a letter where you can go and read the letter yourself. She said it was misjudged. She said it was a draft. She apologised immediately the same day. It's been going on for 11 months. A white MP said that there was a run on shekels when I think two Jewish businessmen had done something. He said there's a run on shekels. It's clearly anti-Semitic. That case was solved in 5 months. Another black MP, Kay Osamor, put out, I think it was a post where I asked for the end to genocide in Gaza on the same day that the ICJ had said that there is a case to be answered as to whether it's a genocide or not. She has had the whip suspended. You've also got the Ford report hanging over, which talks about how the Labour operates a hierarchy of racism. Mm. So I found it disgusting last week that they were there trying to claim the moral high ground on race. And I'm so glad that I did not hear from Jess Phillips.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because if ever there were, like, I'm literally just not a violent person, but I will cut my eye after someone. and the eye cutting that I would give her would make her feel like she'd been physically cut. Because this is a woman who kind of made her bona fides by claiming that she had told Diane Abbott to fuck off. Mm. And then it turned out that she hadn't. And I have that from somebody that was there when that happened. That I have a source. I actually have a source, which is crazy. And said this awful stuff. But she's the shadow minister for women. She hasn't publicly come out
what women
and support it. Well, this is it. She did not publicly come out and support Ipsana Begum in the full-throated way that she has done with so many other women until it was pointed out to her, it's kind of black and white who you support. She said, I support her privately. No, I need you to be as loud with the kind of apology as you are for disrespect.
I support way, 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 way deep down.
Dom, did you talk to the black women in your life about the whole Diana?
I did. Initially, I didn't. And I think it's similar to what you said at the start in terms of there's a lot of black women that don't even want to speak publicly about how this has made them feel. I had a conversation with my mum, and it was actually my brother who raised it, and he just basically said, I'm sorry for what you must be feeling right now and what this is bringing back to light. Because the first thing that she spoke about was that this just, it takes you back to those many little microaggressions and sometimes just flat-out racism that you experience throughout your life, and little experiences which I think other people don't really understand how much they affect you. And one of the very recent examples she gave was about her 360 review at work, and how somebody had anonymously, as part of that review, said that she feels that she's very unapproachable. She feels that she's quite aggressive. And the cherry on the cake was that she felt that she was unapproachable despite never having had an interaction with her. She'd never spoken to her. Nothing. And I think the part that just, it makes me so sad, and I think this is for black women worldwide, but I can only really speak to the black women in my life who were either born in this country or migrated to this country in the late 50s, early 60s. And people like Diane Abbott, who's the generation in between my mum and my grandma, they've experienced so much in this country. They've experienced so much throughout their life. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's quite easy for us to kind of forget that those people in our lives have had a life before we came into it. Mm-hmm. And it's only as I've got older that I've started to really empathize and understand the life that they had before I came along, the life that they've lived thereafter, but sheltered me from, and the pain that they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if you're a white woman, a middle-class white woman in particular, the older you get, the more deferential the world becomes towards you, the more that you are just welcomed into your old age. And yes, there is definitely a patriarchal element to you kind of forgotten, but still the world tends to be nicer towards you as you get older. Mm-hmm. And it like affected me deeply just to see Diane Abbott standing up and sitting down 46 times and just being ignored, because like you said, Angela, that was the most perfect visual as to how black women of a specific age within this country are seen. And it makes me really, really palpably angry to think about it, because as you will both as well, whenever I see Diane Abbott, I'm looking at my mum, I'm looking at my grandma, and it's like your value is fuck all compared to the rest of this country. And it just, I really, really struggle to talk about it without losing my temper, because it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's. I think it's that, and it's also like, especially within black communities, I think this is fairly, I'm making a generalization, but I think it is a safe generalization. This idea of, you know, respecting your elders, especially, and the emphasis that we put on, having that understanding of what older generations have gone through, or even not, there's just a cultural sort of, you know, you respect your elders type of thing. So when we hold up our elders into a certain standard, and then someone from another demographic in the society treats them as less than we would treat anybody of any age, that is so infuriating. So I totally get that. And I think it's particularly potent for people of color and for black people especially. And I actually was listening to another podcast where one of the hosts, who is first generation Chinese American, I think, and his parents were Chinese immigrants, he was talking about how he, when he was a kid, like 7 years old, you know, you look up to your parents and you think that they're sort of like infallible and perfect, and you look to them to be sort of the strongest people that you know. There's this like, in, you know, if you've grown up with a relatively like healthy, happy childhood, so you really look up to your parents. So they were driving in a car, and then another car pulls up to them, and it's like these little shitty teenage girls, like white girls, and they start making like the sort of stereotypical like Asian eyes at them. And I don't want to tell this other person's story, but basically what he was saying was like he was so angry in that moment to see his parent treated so disrespectfully that witnessing that does something to you. And yes, of course, it's an anger, but also like sometimes you can feel shame and just like just pain to see that happen. So even though, you know, something like this happens to a Diane Abbott and this is an older Black woman, it's not just going to be Black women who are impacted by seeing that or where it's like a reflection in their lives. It's going to reflect on people like you and you, Dom, Angelo, who feel like I'm seeing an elder that I relate to being treated this way.
I think it is that, but then it is, just to kind of expand on what I was saying earlier, the women from those generations, mm-hmm. it feels like, have never been able to live for themselves. They've always had some kind of element of service that they deliver to, whether it's Black men, whether it's to their constituents, yeah. whatever it is, they never are able to live for themselves or represent themselves. And I think about the Black women in my family, they have done nothing but just contribute and just provide and just support emotionally, physically, mm-hmm. financially, whatever it is, every single one of them. And I feel like that is the way that Black women are looked at just in society. It's just, what do you offer? What do you offer? Mm-hmm. And the second that you're deemed to no longer offer something, then you're cast away. Like, yeah. you cast away. She's not important to the Labour Party, hence why she's being cast away. And it's mm-hmm. just, you'd like to think that the year that we're in right now, the era that we're in, we've got to a level of progression that Black women can be Black women for themselves and be proud of who they are, and it actually be reflected in the love that they get back. And it's just, it's depressing that that's not the case.
I think the thing that boils me, my blood, though, is the gaslighting that happens yeah. as well. So
yes.
take the world of theatre. There was absolute, like, outrage, because a couple of plays in London have hosted blackout nights where they invite Black audiences to it. I know that Tambo and Bones did it, and I know that Slave Play is doing it as well. And there's a lovely clip where the director, who's an American director, talks about the power of being radically invited into yeah. a space that you're not traditionally welcomed in. But you've got a situation where Diane Abbott serves as a proxy for so many Black women's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be, and it's exhausting as a Black guy, so it's exponentially more exhausting as a Black woman to navigate this world knowing at any point that your dignity can be taken away from you. Diane Abbott was minding her business. In 2019, she was not part, I don't believe, of... she certainly wasn't running the country, and this guy was making those comments then. They've come to light now, where she is a backbencher with no whip. And this country, I can imagine that for Black women of a certain age, a blackout night, a night where you know it's going to be people that are just like you, is something that is so... like relaxing, so peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this country is like, well, that is reverse racism. Like, if you don't get your well-coiffed, private school educated...
Crusty,
still haven't learned the value of lotion backside out of here. Like, what are you doing? Like, let these people live. And I tell you what's going to boil my blood the most, and I'm telling you now, it could be my Travis Bickle moment. As Taxi Driver, for those of you that haven't seen it. At some point in the future, and I hope it's a long time into the future, Diane Abbott will go to the ancestor. She will pass away. And a Keir Starmer or a Jess Phillips is going to come out there and have this moving mm-hmm. eulogy.
You know they will.
And I'm just going to be... boo! boo you. Because do you know what? Can we stop giving flowers to people when they die and start treating them with humanity when they're alive? Mm-hmm. I don't want Diane Abbott to get her flowers when she passes. I want her to have her flowers right now. I want her to be respected as a trailblazer right now. I want her to have the whip restored right now. I want the Labour Party to act on the Ford report right now. But they won't do that because actually this country is founded upon racism. You can't tell me any different. The greatest Brit is a guy that starved 4 million people in the Bengal province. But he won the war. Okay, we're going to just have to agree that we see this from different perspectives.
Yeah.
So I just hate the gaslighting that happens when you have a different point of view to the consensus.
And it's so fascinating being an American living here because America's very open about our racism. It's just right. There's no. There's very little nuance. It's pretty out in the open. Especially living there, it's pretty direct. And so I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before, but how there's this idea of like, oh, well, the UK is bad, but look at America. Like, we're not as bad as them. Look at those clowns over there. And it's like, actually, it's the exact same, but you've gotten so suave and good about redirecting the focus and using very sort of flowery language and like a more intelligent way of speaking, so it doesn't. It sounds nicer. It's like a nicer form of racism.
A lot of it isn't,
but it's the same thing. Or a lot of it isn't said.
Oh, you said
like
Kelly Badenoch out.
The same systems are in place. The same effects are happening. You know, it's the same impact. It's just it looks softer from the outside.
You see, it needed for it to be an American brand of racism, which it was with Hester.
Yeah,
for people to start talking about it,
yeah.
For it to be in the news and a headline for what 4 or 5 days that it was.
Mm.
But it's only because I think again people went, oh, hold on, what, she doesn't have the whip. Why doesn't she have the whip?
Yeah.
Oh well, they have their views on what she said. But hold on, what about these white male MPs that said terrible things?
Yeah.
And they got it back. Oh, why did that guy in Rochdale? Why was he supported for like 4 days after what he said, Kate? Oh. And it literally has to be this country. So the one thing that Britain does better than America is hide how racist it is.
Yeah,
like we are.
Yeah, that's
what I mean. We're the master. Your first laws were based on British Commonwealth law.
Yeah,
the Virginia Code, otherwise known as the Virginia Slave Code, were based on British common law. Like, large up Diane Abbott. Both the leading political parties, you're very smelly. And I think we're going to have a super low turnout at the next election.
Yeah. I actually think there was only one slightly good thing to come out of what happened with Diane Abbott this last week. And it was the fact that it coincided with Question Time being in Liverpool.
Which yes. was just the only place it could have been that would have been better would have been like Belfast.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. or Peckham. It was...
Who are you voting for? Let's put it out there.
What?
In the next election, if it was held tomorrow, who are you voting for?
I don't want to go back into this again.
No. No context. You don't have to justify your answer. Who are you voting for?
I actually don't know. And this is the first time that I've ever in my legal voting age life been in this position. Because I've always said, we had the conversation, I think, this time last year. And me and Dan were speaking quite heatedly about why we're going to vote for Labour in the next general election. Just to get rid of the current government. But in that 12 months since, things have gone really, really far south for me. And it's now got to the point where the fact that they've been so slow to call for an end to the genocide that it's happening in Gaza, the fact that we've got situations like we do right now with Diane Abbott, and it has really just spoken to the way they've treated her for the past, not just 11 months, the past God knows how long. I, with a good conscience, don't think that I can vote for them right now. So then I'm asking myself, well, who do I vote for? I don't know.
I think it's important to say that Dom takes it as read that you know that he wouldn't vote Tory.
Yeah, very important. ABC, baby. ABC.
But back to elections. It's a dark time for elections for me.
Isn't Trump calling back to Operation Wetback as well now?
Trump's winning the next election, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it turns out that if you fund a genocide, the Muslim voters and the working class voters and the voters of color, they go, yeah, I'm probably not going to vote for you. Mm-hmm. But the crazy voters and the racist voters go, I've got my guy and I am riding or dying. Did you see today that he wasn't able to front up the cash for the money that he owes? This he owes so much money. Like, the if I had the amount of money that he owed, I could probably buy several, like, cities in England.
Probably.
He owes about $500 million.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got those mob ties, allegedly.
To give you an idea of how big $500 million is, $500 million seconds was about 15 and a half years ago.
Quick math.
Well, yeah, where's the fact checkers in here?
I've done it with in teaching to kind of explain to kids the difference between a million and a billion.
Mm.
That a million seconds is about 11 days ago, and a billion seconds is about 31 years ago.
A proper billion, not one of those fake American billions.
But yeah, when he gets voted the president again, he's going to be like, well, my first act is that if you're the president, you can't owe anybody any money.
Yeah.
Come see me if you want it. I've got Secret Service 10 toes down.
This is so wild. This is such a wild time to be alive.
But this is the thing, though, is that the Labour Party here and the Democrat Party in America seem to be going for the same strategy, which is that other people are worse.
Bend over. And
yeah.
But surely Brexit... Are we going to be part of that? Are we going to address it?
And now we're going to talk about Vibe Scott. Seemed like the perfect segue.
It was. Men or other.
Sorry, I derailed you there. Continue.
Yeah, no, all I was going to say is that they kind of, the strategy of you have to vote for us because what's coming is worse, they should have learned from 2015 and 2016 that people don't do that. Because that was the strategy for Brexit, which is what would be there is worse. By the way, they were right, but you don't win by without hope. And
yes.
Hillary Clinton as well, like she ran a bad campaign. Can we be honest?
That she ran a bad. So if you say like this is the thing that's worse, it almost adds more support to that thing because you've made it the underdog.
But it's more simple. If one side is saying vote for me or the other, because the other side is worse, and the other side is saying there'll be big change, and you look at your own situation and go, my situation is bad, I don't want least worse, I want change.
Yeah.
No matter how bad change might be.
Yeah.
I've got used to bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that we're going to, I think Labour are going to win the next election here, just because They tried to kind of get a new one in, like they tried to off Rishi like last night. They were like, they were like, there's nothing left. Yeah. but in America, Trump will, oh my gosh, it's gonna be a dark 2025 has the capacity to be worse than 2020 and 2016,
which is wild.
I didn't think 2020 and 2021. Are going to be talked about as the Dark Ages. I think they are the two worst years of human existence in the last 50 years.
I mean, it definitely depends on where you're standing on the globe. But yeah, I'm sure that in Western history, for sure, or culture. I mean,
you're struggling to find anything worse if we're talking the last half a century. Which is a shame.
Yeah, I mean, we had a global pandemic and we're like descending back into modern fascism. So
I don't want to go back and talk. It wasn't that it was just the pandemic. It was the haphazardness of we're shutting down. We're not shutting down. We are shutting down. I was on a train when one of the lockdowns was called. Like, and I was like, do I turn back? I'm going cross country.
This is your life now. You live on the train.
I was just there literally like, what do I do? And it was so funny because it was the same day I decided to carry on with my journey because I'm like, I'm not going back up to the North England to be miserable. Let me spend some time with family. And I went through King's Cross and then 2 hours later, there was all, remember those pictures of King's Cross where it was like everybody was leaving London? Mm. It was just mad.
Yeah.
But yeah, can we talk vibes?
Do you want to go into vibes?
Yeah, let's go into vibes because I think we need something to kind of cleanse the palate after talking about the crushing effects of racism and fascism on modern Britain and America.
All right, so talk vibes to me.
So Dom and I have spoken about this on the group chat. Vibes Cartels has been freed pending potentially a new trial in Jamaica. And where we came down on this is two things can be true.
Can't wait to hear this.
The Jamaican judicial system suffers slightly from corruption. This is. I feel like Dom's going to be like my Jamaican translator. A fuckery this. So it does suffer from some corruption. But Vibes killed that guy.
Vibes. Oh, he did that shit.
I chopped him up and I burnt the house down and they'll never find him. And
but the jewel right there. You can't trust him.
But I always look. Is this a safe space? Is this a I haven't really messed with dancehall music since he got locked up. You forget that 2011 was one of the great dancehall years. Do you remember how summertime had us all in a chokehold?
Up in the club, we gone again. Yeah. Well, Platt. Yeah, them fat guan man. It's not even the right one. That's not even the right one, is it?
But I was going to say.
Pool party.
Yes.
That rhythm was fucking banging, man. Oh. And this really rings true to me because I was in Jamaica summer 2011 and it was wild because I was in Jamaica when he'd just been locked up the first time. And also whilst I was in Jamaica, he escaped. So every single day, right? Anyone that's not been to Jamaica, right? Jamaican radio is the firest radio you will ever, ever hear anywhere. It's just the best radio. And every single day, every hour on the dot was just, where is he? We're in there. There's been a sighting here. It was mad. But then every single minute, there was just either summertime or another tune on that same rhythm. Oh my God, it was a great time.
Mm. So if he starts releasing quality music again, because that whatever sound system, whatever music production system he had in jail wasn't doing it.
His smartphone?
Yeah.
His 61-track album recorded on his smartphone?
Will you listen?
I don't know. I really don't know. Because, right, so the conflict that I have, Jello, is, yeah, he did that shit. Right? Yeah, the music slaps. Again, several things can be true at once. But the bit that I don't quite like, we're doing it now, so I'm as guilty as anybody else at this, right? Whenever something that is very much clearly and obviously objectively wrong happens in a Jamaica, in a Nigeria, in any of these countries, it's always straight to the funny. This is madness. We're talking about murder. We are talking about murder and dismembering of bodies.
Yeah.
And we're just running to jokes. It's mad.
What I will say, because I got a joke lined up, you see. You cannot be surprised that a guy who had a track called License to Kill and talked about all the guns that he had and how big they were, you can't be surprised that he might have got involved in a little murder.
His last name is Cartel. His chosen
but hold on. No, context. No. The first word is vibes. It's a cartel of vibes.
He vibes with the cartel. the vibes of the cartel.
I was just
thinking,
but do you remember the, was it the Young Thug trial in the States?
Where they Bobby played Lifestyle. Shmurda? Is it Bobby Shmurda?
No,
it was
they played Lifestyle in the courtroom.
And it was that
like,
one. Was...
Everyone's there just like, yeah, it goes. Imagine what tune would they have to play in the courtroom for vibes, man?
It would be License to Kill.
It'd have to be, wouldn't
me
it?
Me right for long like giraffe and gone them fatter than April. Like, but the tracks, because it's on the Busy Signal, what was the first track? What was the first track Busy Signal had? Oh, yeah, boss gone. It's on that rhythm. But he said, I'm bigger than 10 Palestine, 10 Russia, 10 China. Boy, them are like eaty.
Oh, my days. Maybe it's a good thing that dance hall slowed down. There was too much incrimination.
But this is the thing, though. Every time I listen to, like, the dance hall, because my uncle, who is a Rasta, he don't listen to dance hall. He's like, I don't listen to that murder music. Mm. I don't listen to that murder music. He's all like, you know, heritage music and all of that. And every time I want to disagree with him, like recently Dexter Dapps went viral on TikTok and I was listening to the track, you know, Shabba Madapot, and you listen to it and he's just admitting crimes. A boy with a drop but the Beretta jam. Like, he's just admitting crime. That's attempted murder.
Isn't it
right?
Great?
Like,
well, when Drill came out over here, they quite often went, shh, over the stuff that was incriminating. When are these artists going to realise that you've got an... You don't need to do it. Who was it? Was it Bounty Killer that was talking about why Afrobeats is so much bigger than dancehall right now? Obviously, there's...
The country size of Nigeria?
No, there is 100% that, but Jamaica held its own for a very long time and then some. But it's about having fun. It's about having fun. We don't want to hear that badness anymore, man.
Yeah, it is true. It is true. But then I think people do want to hear that badness, but...
Who's the biggest gangster rapper in the world right now?
Oh, but hold on. Well, how do you define gangster rap? Because guys are still talking about people getting chopped up on their tracks.
Who is the biggest gangster rapper in the world right now? Do you remember there was a time where gangster rap was objectively the biggest brand?
Yeah, but it's
brand
drug rap
music.
Now. It's drug rap.
Yeah, but everyone does drugs.
It's true. No.
Let's be real about it. Drugs,
not everybody
drugs
has a lyric like a "long people. Time binocular man." Yeah, exactly. The thing is, they just roll off the tongue. Like there are so many murder lyrics.
You know who? This is gonna sound maybe wild, but because I listen to a lot of drum and bass,
yeah,
it just grabs from that, like that killer music. Yeah. Like that is the thing that's killing those, like keeping those tracks alive.
One of my favorite dancehall tunes of all time. Is Bounty Killer, Kill for Fun. You're sitting, and the word I got on, it's just about murdering people.
Yeah.
And it's 2024, there's enough murder that's going on by our governments, right? I don't want to get into the club and listen to people talk about how many people
in the club,
shoot up and chop up and all that. No, I'm done.
So, because one of my favorite tracks is Rasatop by Idonia, and... The way that opens lets you know exactly what kind of steez he's on. With a rifle with a hooky back shot in your face and that I can't put it back. And you're just like, okay, so I'm not getting a philosophical debate on the existence of being here. Like, you need it every now and then. In the same way that I'll go back and listen to like Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going through relationship breakup, but I can still appreciate Rumours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not struggling with drugs, but I can still appreciate Back to Black by Amy Winehouse.
Yeah. Yep.
And I ain't chopped up anybody or gone to kill somebody but the gun jammed, but I can still listen to dancehall.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, to conclude, very serious point. To conclude, he seems to have been given a second chance, something that all too often is denied. Mm-hmm. To people of, I can't even make, nah. He did that shit. I just hope that he doesn't do that shit anymore. Because in all seriousness, we laugh and joke. But was it Idonia's son that went to prison forever and a day for killing someone?
Not long ago, either.
And it's tough because if your dad is singing that stuff and you're kind of, and the murder rate in Jamaica is crazy high and those that survive, like it's really not a good thing. To the point that I was planning to go to Jamaica, and family members were like, "Not to the part that we live in, you know," because Dom comes from the nice part of Jamaica.
I don't come from the nice part of Jamaica. My family now live in the nice part of Jamaica.
Oh, okay. So Dom's family have upwardly progressed.
Yes, moving on up.
My little street rap family, we still. I love that it's gardens. I love that it's you hear gardens after a name. You go, oh, that's lovely.
Mm.
But when the first one is Tivoli, it's slightly different.
The thing is, though, is it's sad because I am always really, really quick to stand up for Jamaica because the amount of times that I've got friends that come to me and they say, oh, I want to go to Jamaica, but I'm scared. Like, now, Jamaica has got its ills. certain parts are dangerous, but certain parts of London are dangerous.
I mean, yeah.
Right, go to Jamaica. Don't go to Tivoli Gardens.
Whoa.
No, it's true. All jokes aside, I mean, right now, my grandma, everyone in her neighborhood, unfortunately, the walls are going up. Mm. It's a rough time out there, but still go.
But there are structural reasons, and this is the thing I always come back to, there are structural reasons for it. And while we have been joking about Vybz Kartel, and people just see him as like a murder music rapper. Yeah. He is one of the few artists that like even the Rosses will listen to, because he has spoken a lot of truths on his tracks. And if you go and listen to a track that he did called Poor People Land, he explains how the foreign money that came into Jamaica fundamentally changed it. One of the issues in Jamaica is that the big hotels have cut off the access to the beaches beach, for the people from Jamaica. If you make it so that the people are living in conditions that seem prison-like, you must then expect the behaviour of people that feel trapped.
In fact, actually, no, fuck everything I just said. Don't go. Because that's one of the things that pisses me off so much when I'm out there. And when I was there last year, when you see a beautiful, beautiful beach that you see on Instagram and you see on a postcard, but then you're out there and you drive a minute Riddle. Past that beach, and then it's the public aspect of that coast, and it's completely different.
Yeah,
it's not nice. It's not nice.
Yeah,
so don't go to where the waterfalls are. They're nicer anyway.
But half of those waterfalls you have to pay for now.
Really?
Genuinely?
Nah.
It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, I'm gonna probably edit myself out saying that we should all go to Jamaica.
Yeah, edit out Tivoli as well. Like.
Yeah, definitely.
But in all seriousness, I to your point, Angela, like it's. It is the reality for some people. Like, all jokes aside, it's like the invention of hip-hop, you know? People, and even gangster rap, actually. People just...
Well, it was called Black CNN.
Sharing art, yeah. Just sharing art about their actual lives.
Yeah, but I have an issue when it's... I understand that that's where a lot of people come from and that's the life that they lead, but when you're a multi-platinum artist, do you really need to still be doing that? Glamorizing it right at the top? I don't think that's useful.
Like
I don't
vibes?
Think it's valuable. Yeah, I don't think it's useful. I don't think it's necessary.
But was he glamorizing it? Because
he
did it.
Yeah, but yeah, and glamorizing it.
Yeah.
I understand. If you're like an 18 to 25-year-old man and that is not just the life that you are living, or you've just passed it a little bit, but all those scars are still pretty much, they're open wounds, right?
Yeah.
I understand it there. But once you're so far removed, when's the last time that, I know he's not very present anymore, but 50 Cent made a gangster rap tune? Ain't nobody trying to hear about that from someone that is a multi-millionaire.
Who are the biggest rappers now, right now?
Yeah, I probably actually can't answer that question. A good example, actually, would be Schoolboy Q. He's just released what a lot of people are saying.
But one of the biggest rappers.
No, but it's a good example because he's someone that came out quite clearly as a gangster rapper, quite explicit lyrics about violence and about his past and everything. And now the man's touching 40. He's got what a lot of people are saying is probably the best hip-hop album of the year so far, only 3 months in and whatnot. But the content shifts.
Yeah.
The content shifts, and yeah, you might need to find new fans, but you also hope that your fans will grow with you.
Yeah.
There is no reason that people of Vybz Kartel's age and experience should still be relying on that kind of music to make money nowadays. It's madness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we've given a lot of credit, maybe not on the pod, but I've certainly given a lot of credit, and he's been well received. Gets his last album, where it's a very mature album.
Yeah.
But I would also say I would never criticize an artist who's talking about the struggle to get out, because I don't know. Like, obviously, the postcode wars here started in '99, and so if you were living in London, that was something that you grew up with. Obviously, in America, you can be killed for having the wrong zip code, like.
The wrong hair.
You don't know, literally, Ludacris came out with a track called Area Codes and then was shouting out different area codes. And people, I've seen the videos where people get hyped because they mentioned his area code.
Yeah.
Well, I saw a video the other day. There was kids, probably mid-20s, in a mall, and they were slapping up this guy because he was wearing a haircut which seemed to make him gang-affiliated. And the guy's just there like, bro, it's a haircut, man.
Yeah, it's wild.
This is just how it grows. Like,
yeah. But no, like I said, I'm not denigrating anyone's choice of lyrics when it is current and when it's something that they're around and that's affected them that much. But I think there has to be a point where you're doing more harm than good once you get a bit further down the line, personally.
Mm. I think that, but you know what it is? I think a lot of modern artists look at Chance the Rapper and go, no, keep running that gangster shit. Keep running that game. Because that guy tried to release a gospel album and say, I've really changed. And people are like, fuck out of here. Shit music. Like,
no, I'm with you. I'm with you. I get it.
Well, time will tell what's going to go on with Vibes' this appeal and whether it's for real, whether it sticks. But from one trial to another.
Oh, it's like Dan's here.
Oh. I've really tried
I'm
to tune
that,
in.
I'm giving it that Zidane.
Really
Ooh.
I'm honed in.
Well done. Don't lose it now.
Emojis. Can you imagine sending an emoji on the formerly known platform as Twitter and then being taken to trial for committing a hate crime, for sending a harmless little raccoon? On
but Twitter. That's actually racist.
Yeah.
Look, that basically upholds a whole system of prejudice and discrimination. So, like, you're trying to make it into a little bit of content for your show, but, like, you're actually bang out of order.
Yeah, but in the footnote, you are black and you sent it. I reckon.
But you've got to ask the question, though, haven't you? If they can send raccoon emojis, why can't we send banana emojis or monkey emojis?
Yeah.
So a young black guy was taken to court for an emoji.
Yeah.
And Frank Hester has not had the police knocking on his door for incitement to racial violence. He said she should be shot.
Yeah.
He sent an emoji.
I hate all black women and she should be shot.
Is less violent, is less incitement to racial hatred than sending a raccoon, and was it a raccoon and a coconut?
No. So essentially, someone on Twitter sent to a conservative party,
a prospective parliamentary candidate.
Yes. Who is black? Someone on Twitter sent. Oh, who is black? Who also said that a black guy who was murdered, the protests that were happening around that, that the protesters were hysterical. So you have this conservative black prospective parliamentary member saying that people protesting the murder of a black person is hysterical. Then on Twitter or X, whatever, some user sent to that prospective parliamentary member a raccoon emoji and a clown emoji. The parliamentary member perspective then informed the police and charged. So said that a hate crime had been committed against him. Mind you, the person who sent the raccoon emoji and the clown emoji was also a black person.
I actually feel
the UK America.
I don't know about you two. Maybe it's a little bit different. I don't know. We'll find out as I say this. I feel like I'm in a really good position to speak on this because of where I grew up. Now my blackness has never been called into question by people who know me, mm-hmm. ever. All of the stereotypical things about black people, the music, the food, all the culture—they're in abundance. But because of where I grew up, in a very white part of Yorkshire, when I went to play basketball or play sport with black kids from Huddersfield, which was only a few miles down the road, but it was a different world from where I grew up, it was never explicitly called a coconut, but it was always alluded to because of the way that I spoke and the words that I didn't say and the way that I
pronounced it. Oh, I got Oreo all the time.
100%. And then conversely, when I started working in the city, there was a certain person who made a comment about the fact that I'm not even really black because I don't speak a certain way and because I don't dress a certain way. Mm-hmm. So it's happened there on both sides. And we've all discussed this previously. I mean, it's how this podcast became a thing. But if the cap fits, man, like at the end of the day, this is the way that I look at it. The word coconut in this instance, right, when used amongst black people, is very, very different to any other kind of racial discrimination that we'll be talking about, yeah. right? We're not saying you're a coconut because you like a certain type of music. Mm-hmm. We're not saying you're a coconut because you don't like spicy food. Mm-hmm. We're not saying you're a coconut because you need to get your shit lined up. It's nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. It's things that directly impact, hold back, and basically perpetuate violence against black people, against people that look like us. That is where I think the term, again, I'll say it, if the cap fits, I'm never ever going to see someone that is sending one of those kind of emojis to somebody that is very, very intentionally doing what they can to hold people that look like me back. I'm never going to say anything against those kind of people.
Well, and it's the coconut, well, I mean, or I'll say Oreo because we say Oreo in the States. If it was used in a political term, or maybe one black person to another, not so much with Oreo, that is actually just usually, I don't know, white people calling you black on the outside, white on the inside. But the same idea, well, more of the idea here is that you're saying that somebody who has black skin is still upholding the systems of white supremacy. Yeah. And therefore, it's not a hate crime. You're making a political critique on this person saying, you might look like me, but you're not for me. You're for the systems that are against me.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And let's give some more context. The thing that incited this young man to speak to this prospective parliamentary candidate in the first place was this prospective parliamentary candidate describing people that were up in arms about the killing of Chris Cabba, an unarmed black 24-year-old man, by the Metropolitan Police as hysterical. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that kind of speaks to the point that you made about them upholding white supremacy more than that fact. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The amount of people of different minorities who tap dance and speak against people that look like them in order to, and knowing that it's because that is their role within the system, yeah. is truly terrifying. Mm-hmm. Cami Badenoch today has been doing the rounds, essentially providing cover for Frank Hester. And so for me, if she is okay to go around showing the diversity of thought that not all black people think the same, mm-hmm. I think that in this hypothetical scenario, it should be okay for me to call her a coon or a clown or a race traitor or whatever the terms in the community that we find acceptable are. And I will note that coconut is also used in other communities and it has different meanings there. The second you try to police tone or you try to police nuance in language, you go down a really dark path. And I find it absolutely amazing that the lengths that this prospective parliamentary candidate has gone to maintain a system which will not help him when he is out late at night driving a car and a Met police officer decides that he wants to have a bit of fun with him.
Exactly.
Your posh private school accent is not going to protect you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I say that as somebody that has mastered the posh private school accent, having never gone to a private school. Mm-hmm. It will not protect you. Big black guy. You can be 5'1". You're a big black guy. And I just find it tragic. That's what it is. It's tragic. And it was Nels who kind of, about a year ago when Nels came on the pod, maybe even 2 years ago.
Other than that, yeah.
He made the point that the Tories and Boris Johnson in particular have been so clever on race because they realised that you could get people of colour to uphold the racial status quo much more effectively than white people could, and people of colour can go much further in what they say in their racist language, and it is racist language that they sometimes engage in, because people are terrified of calling people of colour, a racist. It's like, it's the Harry Potter and the seven naughty words. Did you use one of the seven naughty words? Then it's definitely racism. Did you not use one of those words? Well, then it's not racism. And yeah, I think that what this case shows is that a law that was essentially intended to protect minority groups is now being used to go after them. Genius. So good job, prospective candidate. I hope you lose. I hope you lose your seat, and I hope you don't even get your deposit back. but yeah, I'd rather the Tories with the red rosette win in some seats.
Yeah.
Because it's even though people, you know, we might see, oh God, pardon the expression, but we might see a spade for a spade. And I mean that in the figurative sense, the right figurative sense.
Yeah.
But even though we might be able to see things for what they are, a lot of people,
a majority,
will see a black person or a person of color perpetuating racism and really think it cannot possibly be racist because of what they look like.
Or it's just the case that they know it's racist, but then it just gives them a pass for their own racism.
Or it gives them, yeah.
Which is,
but it makes in a lot of people's eyes, it makes that behavior in sort of protected against critique.
Yeah.
Which I mean, is not correct.
What are we as a percentage? Is it 3%?
3%.
3.5% as black people.
In the UK, yeah. 3%.
So yeah, doesn't matter, does it?
It's wild. Especially living in London, you would just never really think that, but.
Yeah. Well, I know it may have changed, but wasn't it something like 65% of all black people used to live in London?
London, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that kid was 26 years old when he was arrested. 26. So you have ruined a young man's life over sending a tweet.
Well, that's the thing. Sent a tweet, which, by the way, isn't the whole thing about Twitter or X now supposed to be freedom of expression and protecting free speech and this, that, and the other. And then you're going to have somebody arrested. They've lost jobs. They are now suffering from depression. And I'm getting this from an article that Nels wrote in The Independent,
yep,
I believe.
Yeah, Independent.
So all of this consequence for this person. And then the time and the money and the resources wasted to put on an actual trial with a jury, people attending for multiple days. Are you kidding me? We got to find different resources for handling these types of issues. Because at the moment, it's just call the police or take someone to court. And these institutions are just not, they're not suited for the smaller sort of just like civil issues. I mean, I don't even think this should have been an issue. But what I mean is like, it takes a massive amount of resources that is just wasted when you go to the police or you go and take someone to court.
Oh, I think it was entirely cynical on this prospective MP's part.
Total distraction, sure, but
not even a distraction. This would be a way for him to kind of burnish his Tory credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Do you know what it is? I think I can say this without any sense of legal trouble. What was the Tarantino film that Jamie Foxx was in?
Django Unchained.
I think a lot of black people across the Western world watch that film and have the wrong hero from the film. I don't believe that Samuel L. Jackson's character was one that you were supposed to idolize. And the way that some of these people are moving would
suggest. Oh, right. I'm with you now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in legal trouble. But I think a lot of them, maybe because they've loved him in all his films, thought that he was the hero of that film. And they don't realize that actually he's a villain.
And in some ways, well, I won't say the worst villain, but he is pretty bad.
Definitely not the worst villain.
Not the worst, because he's also a victim, but he is a villain.
It's the old Malcolm X thing, isn't it? You know, we sick boss.
He does get some of the best lines, though.
Oh my God!
Do you know what? Still never seen the film, but I know enough about it to know
that way.
I I feel the same way about Tarantino that a lot of the black community feels about Eminem. We just...
No, I get that, but Samuel L. Jackson does actually have a pretty hilarious performance, even though he's a villain.
He plays it so well.
He plays it so well.
Hate him.
But he's so funny.
It's disgusting.
Oh, man.
No, it's
just watch the Samuel L. scenes, actually. You could probably watch a compilation, and I think that's enough.
Good episode, isn't it? That was fun.
Did
you have fun?
Yeah, you came in too hot.
That was good, though, to be fair. Right, I've started the outro here. That, to be fair, I thought you were going to be worse than you actually were. You puckered up very, very nicely.
You did.
Your eyes were a little bit puffy, but you sound good and you brought the energy. I'm very proud of you.
You really did.
Michael Jordan flew in game.
Game six.
Even though he had no left hand. We're over the 90s.
I'm very, very proud. Very, very proud of you.
Thank
proud
you,
of
you all. Likewise. Nice. Likewise. Yeah. Well, this has been another great episode.
Should we call it a day?
I think so. Let's get out of here. This has been another episode of Black in a Box, and we are out.